amore. Hey, Audrey. Honourable members, good morning. I can see we have a quorum for the meeting. And I think we should just shoot straight into the issues. Nolthando, let's fly the agenda and just confirm the quorum, and then we move forward. And yes, let's look at that. Members, there's the agenda.
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning, Khoyemore. There's the agenda. Any additional matters on the agenda that members would like to add? If there is none, is there a move for adoption of this agenda?
I move
for
the adoption of the agenda.
Well, you're moving for the adoption. Any seconder?
Lutuli, seconds, and greetings, Chairperson.
Madandona, how? You. I'm happy you're back. Still in one piece. Yeah. Honourable members, welcome. Let's welcome the DM and the team education as led by management and the DG. Today we'll be looking at the readiness for intake of next year in our schools. How ready are we? How ready are the provinces for where the NCOP, our focus is more on what is happening in the provinces where we come from. And even if there are provinces that are not represented by anyone here, we'll have to look at that province also. So how ready are they? If there are delays, what are kind of interventions that we are putting in as the department to ensure that we help them to be ready for the intake, at least even to avoid the stampede during the reopening of schools. Other provinces have this, online registration of schools. I think that actually helps quite a lot in alleviating the, reducing the lines and the stress of looking for space for children in the beginning of the year. Let's look at the apologies. I know the minister won't be in the meeting because she has a cabinet meeting today. And I'm happy we have the DM in the meeting. When we have the DM, you are okay. Even if the minister is not there, I think we'll be able to push. Nolthando, are there other apologies apart from that of the minister?
No, Chair, there's no other apology.
Yeah, in the absence of any apologies, I'll give over to the DM to open the meeting and tell us how ready are they for next year. Thank you. Over to you, DM, and welcome.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Greetings to you.
Yeah,
it's a birthday from the 1st until 31st of December. It's
yeah,
especially the nature of the birthday. Thank you so much, Chair.
Sure.
And greetings to all the honorable members. Greetings to the leadership in the Department of Basic Education, led by the DG himself. Want to thank you, Chair. Yes, Minister is not available, but the ministry is represented by the DM, so, and the department is fully represented. The DG is here, and we are indeed ready. We want to appreciate that the COVID has taught us lessons. We are learning every day, and we become more and more effective every day. So that's how we can thank COVID, though we are crying on the other hand. So maybe to update members on the running of the examinations, the exam ran very well, Chair. Yes, there were minor glitches here and there, like when you administer more than 700,000 people, you will experience challenges. But it ran very well, and most of the key subjects are concluded. And December. But I want to thank the support that we have from the members of the Select Committee, and even for the whole year, for us to be able to run the department under the circumstances. DG, I don't know whether I'm audible enough because my network is not very good this side, but Chair, allow me to hand over to the Director General, who is here with his entire team, to be able to take us through the presentation. To be ready, Chair, we are ready for 2022. And one other thing, Minister will be announcing the results on the 20th of January. And MECs will be announcing on the 21st of January, 2022. You are cordially invited, Chairperson, to the announcement of the results. Let me take this opportunity and give to DG to take us through the presentation. Over to you, DG, with your permission, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chair, traveling. DM, indeed, I want to echo your sentiments. It's been extremely difficult. 2020 was impossible. Beginning of 2021 was even more difficult than what we had seen in 2020. But it is the leadership in the department of the Minister and DM, MECs, oversight structures of Parliament, including the Select Committee, that enabled the sector to soldier on, to instill courage and confidence amongst us public servants and foot soldiers who had to keep the sector afloat. So I think this time of the year, I want to convey also our greatest appreciation and thanks for that. Had it not been of this leadership and oversight, we doubt whether we would have been able to pull it through again in 2021. We do that because we look back. We have the advantage of doing so because we're rounding off 2021. We're presenting a report on the state of readiness. I do know that the chair would like us to do a punchline and not go word by word, detail by detail, every slide, and so on. Mrs. Geyer will definitely do that, just summarize, do the punchline to take the Select Committee on what the crystal ball looks like for 2022, as we have prepared with provinces. This information comes from the engagement that we had with provinces to indicate their individual state of readiness. We are quite comprehensive this time around. We've taken an all-round assessment of the state of readiness. We're looking at how provinces get themselves ready for 2022, but we're also looking at ourselves, DBE. What are the policy activities that we have taken place to enable 2022 to proceed seamlessly? Chair, without much ado, I'm going to humbly request Honorable Deputy Minister that we allow Mrs. Geyer, as the branch head responsible, to take the meeting through the presentation. I am in this meeting, Chair, but I must also indicate, Deputy Minister, I'm in the social cluster meeting because I am chairing a government cluster of the social sector, but I've indicated to them that I have to be in this meeting as well because we are counting to the Select Committee on a state of readiness. As soon as we are done, I'll get back to that meeting. If you allow me, Honorable Chair, I am then going to request Mrs. Kaya to run the committee through the presentation quickly. Ms. Kaya?
Thank you very much, DG, and good morning, Honorable Chairperson, as well as the Honorable Members of the House. Also, I acknowledge and greet our Deputy Minister in the meeting. So, we, like DG has indicated, this is our readiness report. It is compiled from all the information we received from provinces. Normally, we go for visits in November, but because of the COVID pandemic, we could not go this year. And we are planning some visits in January from the 12th to the 28th, where we will go out and gather further information based on this report, as well as we will be doing follow-up visits, follow-up assessments, where there are problems that are indicated in the reports that we get. And we will do this through telephonic follow-through from the 28th February to the 11th of March. And thereafter, we will then send monitoring teams out, which would include the DBE officials as well as the circuit managers in the provinces. I want us to go to slide 6, where we just are indicating the sample districts that we will be visiting for 2022 when we go out. We have received information and compiled this report on all the information of all the provinces. So it's not sampled information, but when we go out and we do further monitoring, these are the districts that we will be going to. Just the areas we indicate on that slide, but I won't spend time on it because I'll go straight into covering the COVID update in terms of what we have done in preparation for 2022. So we have the standard operating procedures, and this is in all the schools and all the provinces. We've made no new changes to the standard operating procedures, so that will still be the status quo when we go and open up in 2022. And all school principals and SGBs are required to ensure that these standard operating procedures are implemented, and provinces have communicated that to the principals. And the monitoring will then happen to see the extent to which this is being implemented. On our vaccination campaign, we've just given information there. Everyone knows that the DBE had a large campaign over the months of June, end of June to the end of July. And we're just giving you information on the number of educators who were on the database, which covered all the officials in the PERSAL. It covered all the teachers, it covered the SGB-funded teachers, come all the independent schools, the food handlers, and they were all registered on the health database. And then the people that chose to be vaccinated, which is the number, that 455,360, and they received the Johnson J&J vaccine. And then beside of that, we also had other teachers who prior to our vaccination campaign were already vaccinated, because they were of the appropriate age to be vaccinated. And after that, we were able to still chose also to go and get vaccinated. So the number is up. Then as a 12-year-old, 17-year-old, we are just indicating that this is the policy of health that is starting the vaccination of that age group of 12 to 17-year-olds. And they are conducting the vaccinations. On our side, we have established together with the Department of Health an integrated school health program task team, and this task team then works together with health, and they ensure that those children who wish to be vaccinated get vaccinated. We indicate that the school is not a vaccination site. However, if you are getting vaccinated, and they do, you come, there is a request to come to school. You have to have the consent forms that are signed by parents or guardians as directed in the ISHP policy. But if it's a vaccination off-site, then you do not require the ISHP consent forms. However, the ICE actually will encourage learners to vaccinate and to bring guardians and parents where possible. On the recommendations of the Ministerial Advisory Committee, we are just reinforcing the previous position that they took on the functioning of the schools at full capacity. This is a decision of theirs from the 22nd of July 2021, and it is around the primary schools opening up at full capacity. The advice was that the primary schools had to have social distancing where it was possible, but if it wasn't possible, then they should still come to school and open at full capacity, but they should maintain some feasible physical distance, and the children should be masked all the time, and they should have 2-hour breaks, and that those breaks should be between 5 and 15 minutes. The high schools are advised that when it was possible, that the high schools could open and have a physical distance of 1 meter, that they could then open up for to operate every day. But where that was not possible, that they should rather have continue with the rotational timetable. And so that's been the status quo within the schools, and we've tried to manage it like that. We have to ensure from the side of the DBE that we have the PPEs and in the schools, and so especially as describing the standard operating procedure, and there are a number of measures that we have put in place to ensure that that happens. On e-administration, which is the next theme I'm focusing on, we're just highlighting here exactly how our email system works. So our email system is a data management system where we use information that we gather from the schools in the 9 provinces to be able to see the information to Treasury. It involves our school realities, which is a document we bring out that has all the clean data and gives you all the information about the department. We also use the EMIS data to report to Parliament as well as to any other sector report that we have to have. And this data information helps us for planning. It helps us to support in institutions as well as it helps us to improve our performance. And it has helped a lot during the pandemic to help us with interventions that we needed to put in place. For the next slide, then just talk to how the data is collected on a quarterly basis. We also work with the Department of Home Affairs to capture the undocumented learners and to make sure that information is correct. And we give you information about how many schools, how many learners, educators, and support that information. And like I said, we're working with the Department of Home Affairs as well. Then going forward, we give you information just about how the system works. So it is about looking at the current system functionality and how we can approve it. Currently, 98.6% of schools in 8 provinces use the SASANS, and only the WCED doesn't use it. They have a different way of collecting data by using tools, and they report against that. We also are in the process and through the modernization of SASANS to look at how the 2021 promotion and the school register, so the results and the school register, which of the new learners can generate new class lists, and they can also prepare registered attendance registers for the school. So that will help a lot in terms of the administrative planning. We give you information about how the update is required on SSN and how the school notifications happen through circular 1 of 2022 that informs the schools of all the required details and all needed to report for that. Then in terms of next slide, we give you information about how SSNs is structured, what it is able to do in various reports that it can compile, as well as the all-important 10-day snapshot of what is the number of letters that have been registered at the school, so that that can inform what the type of reliable learner data is in the country. And then we have another annual school survey which happens in March, and all of that information is very important for us to compile useful data from what's happening at the school level. On learner admissions, we give you information about the closing dates admissions for the different provinces. Once that has closed open reading, we give you information in the next slide on undocumented learners, and I've already told you that we have work with the Department of Home Affairs, but we also just highlight to the House that there was a court case in Eastern Cape called the Pakamisa judgment, and as a result of that, we brought out DBE Circular 1 of 2020, and that advised the provinces on what that was saying, and that it was applicable to all provinces, and that undocumented learners could not be excluded from the schooling environment, that they had to be allowed and given opportunity to learn, which is their constitutional right guaranteed under our constitution, and that the outstanding documents and assisting them with the documents is a matter which ourselves and the officials from the departments need to work with the Department of Home Affairs to facilitate this that happens. So there's evidence of proof that is required in terms of how we have to mitigate the information, and we're just giving you that information in terms of what that evidence of proof is then. Furthermore, we give you information about exactly what the activities are of the various provinces and how they went about with the admissions. There was a number of communications, a number of using radios, using circulars, using different TV programs to highlight, you know, what the situation in the provinces are and how the admissions is unfolding. They also have a management plan in each of the provinces. That's for today. The slide then talk to the breakdown of the learners in the different grades of the province and what the unplaced percentage or numbers are. And you can see here that the highest number of unplaced learners sit in Gauteng as well as in Western Cape, and it is in particular at the onset grade, like grade R or grade 1, and also at grade 8 when they're going to high school. That's where you have this large number of unplaced learners. And then we give you the information about why that is the case. It's because of the late applications that continue to be a problem. Some parents just ignore applying, and so they come at the last moment, despite there being cut-off dates given by the provinces. And also there is an influx from rural communities to big cities, and this has then created some problems. Informal settlements that spring up make it difficult to plan in terms of what exactly that numbers of expected learners would be in the year, and that influx then that comes especially from rural to urban areas presents a problem to us. But we mitigate all of these challenges, especially the ones from urban to rural areas, and we see how best to do our planning in relation to provisioning of classroom space, of teachers and of staff. The issues around English medium schools remain also a problem because they want to have better quality of schools, they expect English medium schools to be that, so we try to see how best to manage that in the provinces. And where there's insufficient schools in urbanized areas, we have to continue to see how we can address that in terms of looking at the mobile classes or the building of new schools, or how we can utilize spaces differently within a school. And there are tensions between the school governing bodies and in terms of their right to determine admissions policy at the school, but then the right of a parent to access to education at the school. So that tension plays itself out for the time. And of course, those provinces who operate on a first-come, first-served basis, they have difficulties because they are challenged by those who live in the local areas and they wish to have the children placed in there. So we mitigate all of that. And there is a pre-closure assessment that we do, and in particular we look at housing and Western Cape around that. On teacher provisioning, we're just giving you information here on exactly what the policy says in terms of what is the criteria that needs to be applied on post-provisioning. And we then look at what is the status of in terms of monitoring for teacher provisioning. So we give you a breakdown in slide 27 on exactly what the 28, sorry, what the province, what the distribution of the post establishment is, They have to declare the post establishment by 30th of September. This tells you when the province was declared. There were some difficulties in some instances, and that was because they could not complete the consultation with the unions. In some instances, the COVID pandemic affected the consultation process. In other instances, they could not reach agreement immediately because of the information that they were engaged in. But ultimately, they were able to declare the post establishment, and all the schools have received their post establishment letters. On the supply of Kundalashaka graduates, we are compelled to report on the Kundalashaka graduates in particular, because this item is it's state money that is used to provide the bursary. And so when we have to report for auditing purposes, the auditor does want to see the extent to which there's value for money on the money that we have spent on from the bursary. And so each year we tell you what are the number of court bursaries that are to be placed. And for this year, there are 6,085 bursaries that have to be placed. They are prioritized on the provincial list, but they are not the only bursaries who are prioritized on the provincial list. We also take bursaries from the NSFAS, and we also take bursaries from who are self-funded to be able to place them, especially where there are subjects that are in high demand. Sometimes the NSFAS bursaries and the self-funded bursaries sometimes get a placement faster than the Funza bursaries, because they offer the subjects that are most needed in a particular area. Then on LTSM and the procurement distribution, we're just giving you information there on the next theme on what is the status of the catalogue. So we have these national catalogues that have been developed, and they are applicable still in the provinces to get materials for various grades, and including sign language and for the EPT grades, as well as for the new grades of technical subjects. And then in the slides which follow, we give you a status report on exactly what the procurement models are that the various provinces take. So in some instances, there is a centralized procurement model to maximize on the economies of scale. In other instances, there is a hybrid model, which then allows for the Section 20 schools to be centrally procured, and the Section 21 schools for the money to be transferred to the schools, and they procure the textbooks or the stationery and this happens, you know, differently in different provinces. So you can just see in the different provinces what the various models are that they can assist with. In the next slide, which is slide 4, here we're talking to what is the retention and retrieval percentages, as well as the percentages reached to get universal coverage per province. And in the slides which follow in terms of state of readiness is talking to exactly what the setup is. So you will know on retrieval, the number of books that are retrieved would give you the number of top-up books that has to be acquired. And so the status quo for each of the provinces and exactly for textbook stationery and when the anticipated dates for delivery are for the top-up or for the stationery delivery is indicated in the last column. And this is done for provinces in this slide. So we can just move on from there. I won't get into the detail of that. It just makes full detailed information that we are providing. Then if we just look at the challenges and how we're mitigating it in our strategies. So we have looked at what exactly the challenges are around textbooks, around stationery, around braille and sign language. And in respect of all of these, where there is a need for us to mitigate specifically on the intervention, we have told you what exactly we are doing at the full from province to province. Some instances it's about how we can look that ensuring that there's proper improved planning, and that in other instances there's no budget allocated because they have funding problems. And so we've looked at how to deal with that. And in other instances, it's just about you know, how you put in place proper measures, or how you look at how you work with the districts and with the directors in the districts there for an intervention on full report, and how you can address those problems opposed to as they are emerging. So that then takes us to the end of this particular theme. I'm now focusing on the curriculum management and in terms of that, yeah, we are telling you all that we have done, especially around the ICT and the digital resources. We have a partnership with a couple partners that we have worked with, and through that, we, it's the next slide I'm talking to now. We have developed state-owned resources and titles. We tell you how much we have. We've got 1,100 titles that we own. And this is just a breakdown that these titles are either textbooks or workbooks or big reader, graded reader or big book, or it's the Mind the Gap study guide. And all of these resources are available for free in PDF form or EPUB or on some of the HTML5 platforms, and it can be accessed like that by learners or by parents or teachers. And the online processing in terms of the resource portal to give an indication of where the DBE zero rated resources for learner support packages are. So this just gives you then that information and what our partnership is with and how we can access that information on the website. So the slide which follows just give you a snapshot of how to navigate when you get into the portal, exactly how to get, you know, into the various information. The same with the DBE class gives you that, and then we give you information as well on the PD online funding portal, and per province we tell you where you can get that information. We highlight our relationship with our partners, particularly the MTN Foundation and the Sierra Vula Foundation. We give you information from the Vodacom Digital Classroom, as well as the Telkom e-Education and the MTN Yellow e-Back platform. These are all useful platforms that can help learners in terms of preparing for their studies. And then the Zero Rating website, we give you the information on that as well. So this is publicly known information that we also make available to everyone. So on the virtual classroom solution, this is a holistic classroom solution that we are providing together with ICASA and with the Department of Communications and Digital Technology, as well as with the mobile network operators. There are 17 schools selected. We show you the province, how they are allocated per network operator, and this will provide a holistic virtual solution to the schools that have been identified. This is a slow process, you know, we need far more funding to really do justice to make this happen first, but our constraints on money is probably where our difficulties lie. So if we then move on, well, we're just telling you that this mobile network operator solution focuses on the grade child learners in particular. And they receive ICT devices, connectivity, training, and technical support for 17 months. And we will continue to see how best we can increase the number of tools that can be provided. On coding and robotics, which is the next thing, we highlight what the SONA commitments 2019 and 2020 are, and we highlight exactly what our what we wish to achieve out of ensuring that with digital skills, we include computational thinking, coding and 21st century skills and innovation and other soft skills, so that our learners are able to interact and have digital knowledge, skills and values, and the complementary soft skills that are required in a digital world, and our learners will then be able to have a competitive edge in a global world as they get out of school. So our objective and the purpose for coding and robotics is displayed in the next slide. If we move to slide, I think it's slide 57. So that just gives you that information about it. And we are looking at developing our learners so that they can solve problems, they can think critically, they can work collaboratively and creatively, that they're able to function in a digital and information-driven world, that the computational thinking skills are there, that they apply these digital skills to transforming to solve everyday problems, and that a new generation of creative, innovative system thinkers can emerge using coding to express their ideas and to adopt a culture of becoming self-directed and lifelong learners. So the next slide talks to the curriculum that we have in terms of digital skills curriculum that I got tonight. And it's about application skills, about internet and e-communication skills. It's about data information management skills, computational thinking skills, and coding. And the details of that is given there.
Recording stopped. Recording in progress.
The program relating to human robotics. So I've indicated that we are in the process of implementing the curriculum. We had a ministerial committee. We had a Minister Gazette, the draft CAPS for coding and robotics. We received public comments during this year in March. And then we also had to send it to Umalusi. Umalusi then asked us to repackage and to resubmit curriculum and assessment policy statements. And we effected the changes and to Umalusi. And so they have to now give us the final word on it. The state of readiness is that we have started with the teacher digital capabilities and looking at what the resources are that are required, the network coverage and connectivity in the provinces, and also to ensure that the 9 provinces establish project management teams and system curriculum development, MST grant and inclusive education infrastructure, and SACI directors to coordinate the implementation of the curriculum when it is up and running. And we've done advocacy in for this year during March and May, and we'll just give you the details of where we have done the advocacy and roadshows in the 9 provinces. 52 districts were visited, and we've interacted with all these officials that we indicate here to ensure that they are orientated. So the next slide speaks to that orientation for grades R to 3 and 7, and then grades R, grades 4 to 6 and 8, and how that had unfolded in the provinces where it has happened, and that we still have to look at the LCSN provision, and we work with our partner, Tafel Foundation, on that. And also we have to look at lesson plans that have to be developed and uploaded into the DBE cloud. The provinces are piloting in grade R to 3 in 200 schools and grade 7 in 1,000 schools. And we have guidelines for the implementation of coding and robotics that is at the final stage. And we monitor as well following that. So the slides that follow just give you the focus. When we monitor exactly what happens in the coding and robotics space in the provinces. So that just gives you an interesting snapshot of, you know, how this is unfolding in schools. And lastly, in the challenges, we highlighted the fact that there's funding problems to procure coding and robotics resources. There's a problem around the scheduling of time because it involves increasing the school timetable, and we need to take that through the ERC and to have this accepted, you know, and increase timetable, school timetable there, and that we need to also appoint the service provider to do the training for grade 7. And then we're saying that schools that have been monitored show common challenges like the shortage of coding and robotics and ICT resources. They have problems on network connectivity for teaching and learning, and the security of closed resources is a problem, as well as the teacher resources remain still a challenge. And then our future plans is talking about continuous teacher orientation, which we had in October of this year, but we'll continue to have next year. We need to develop the exemplars and guidelines that will help to ensure that we are able to engage and teach the learners. And we give you an indication of how the piloting of the curriculum will happen from the different grades in 2022, 2023 and 2024. Moving on then to the nutrition. For nutrition then, we're just telling you that everything is in order here for the 2022 academic year. So the funds, this is a very well established program. The funds are transferred to the schools. There's decentralized procurement that happens. The last tranche will be transferred in December 2021 to 2022. All the contracts are in place for the food and the fuel to be delivered, the food deliveries and the adequate supplies of stock are in place, and the food handlers do daily attendance to prepare the meals, and there are committees that are in place to ensure that there's operational compliance and functionality, and there's joint monitoring that happens to ensure that feeding happens from the first day of schooling. MSMP. And infrastructure, there's various aspects that we are giving in terms of infrastructure. So you will know that we have to look at how we manage the new schools that are being built. DG has done a lot in this area over the last few months in the visits that he has done to provinces monitoring it. And so the main thing is to ensure that the new schools are completed and in time for when the schools have to be reopened, and that the renovations and repairs are also done before the schools open, and there's a campaign for cleaning of schools before the reopening. Where there's storm damage or vandalized schools during the holidays, that there are contingency plans in place to ensure that that is addressed, and that the schools are not disrupted as a result of any storm damages or vandalized schools. We work with the Department of Treasury, with the National Treasury, and with the National Disaster Management Center to ensure that there's a process flow and turnaround period for the rehabilitation of facilities that were affected as a result of natural disasters. And in the case of vandalized schools, we work with the schooling community as well as the provincial department to ensure that the schools are rehabilitated and habitable by the time the schools are open. The various things that we have to look at in infrastructure around classroom shortages. And here we have to look at overcrowding and see how best we can provide mobile classes on the hotspots. We need to look at what the trends are, what the pattern is on influx of learners, and how we can provide temporary accommodation. On maintenance, we have to ensure that the implementation of the maintenance of infrastructure facilities is improved, and that we utilize the EIG grant per province to allocate the maintenance projects from there. And the incentive allowance allocation is on the EIG is being implemented to incentivize qualifying provincial departments to address immediate challenges such as norms and standards and maintenance. And also we have maintenance guidelines that are required. Now the slides that follow just give you a summary of where we are at in terms of infrastructure. On the inappropriate structures, we give you a slide. We also give you, so that you start to have how things are in the provinces around making sure that the infrastructure, the water supply and sanitation is there. The next slide talks to water supply. And here again, in much the same way, we are giving you a summary of what the status is on the water supply. On safe sanitation, the same applies here. We're giving you a breakdown of exactly what happens here. And we zoom in as well on safe, and that we're giving you an indication of the total of schools per organization that is busy here on the allocation of the schools and the state of completion. Then the slides that follow now talk to school furniture. It is about the availability of the school furniture. I've already spoken previously about that, but also about the repair and rehabilitation. We have an agreement with the Environmental Department of Environmental Affairs, with the Department of Labor, and Department of Correctional Services to provide us with new or rehabilitated old and damaged school furniture, and the provinces participate on that contract. And then the specifications for the school furniture have been revised. And they have been approved by South African Bureau of Standards, and so the service providers have to use that when the furniture is procured. And we have an interprovincial task team that monitors all. The next slides give you an overview of the planning of what happens on the process flow of school furniture from planning phase to procurement phase, implementation phase, to monitoring phase. What the details there. And then that concludes on school furniture, on learner transport. We are highlighting that we need to ensure here that the road safety programs are enforced, and that we have to work with the learner transport operators, the parents, and the learners in order to raise an awareness of road safety and law enforcement. And we give you on the next slide the details of what the overview of the number of learners and the needs are and the targets are and the progress is in relation to per province, how the learners are being transferred to the quarter. And then, in terms of the learners with special educational needs, the same is given there. So then we're just explaining in the last slide that what learner transport, the desired outcomes remain, timely delivery of service, rate of road accidents have to be reduced, coordinated approach in relation to planning and implementation. The learner transport operators that adhere to the road traffic regulations, vehicle maintenance must be there, as well as technical support for emergencies. Needs to be viable and sustainable operations. We need to be uniformity of services and tariff structures, and we need to have a coherent performance monitoring system in place. On safety, the school safety, here we're just giving you information on the extent to which we have really tightened up on school safety, the number of districts that we have per quarter, from quarter 1 to 3, looking at our national school safety framework that we have implemented to ensure that the safety committees, the school safety committees are in place, and that proper risk management, and that we follow the implementation of the Occupational Health and Safety Act is there, and that there are emergency and evacuation plans in place, and first aid school kits that are there. So these safety, school safety measures are there to help and to ensure that we continue to train the number of schools on looking at protocols to manage sexual abuse and harassment, as well as to fast track using SSM. Getting good data to inform planning and programming around school safety, ensuring that the school fences are prioritized to ensure the safety of learners, educators and staff, and also that we identified a continuous need to train the educators on positive discipline and the inculcation of human rights-based culture in learning environments and school communities. So on bullying, we have similar programs that are there to ensure that everything is in order at school, and that we try and reduce the bullying and cyberbullying and gangsterism, violence, substance abuse, all of these social ills that put pressures on our communities. Our Minister and Deputy Minister have had road shows to roll out this strategy of ours to ensure that we limit bullying and cyberbullying in particular. And there are a number of initiatives that are aimed at molding the learners to be noble and respectful citizens with high self-esteem and environmental awareness, that we provide psychosocial support in order to prevent and address the hopelessness and frustration and depression and anxiety as a result of bullying. Also to emphasize parental involvement and to ensure that we have strong partnerships and networks to be strengthened and utilized. On social cohesion, just a number of things that we explained to you here, number of programs that we have, which are either hybrid formats. So COVID has affected us quite badly, and we were not able to run these programs on a face-to-face basis, like the National School Moot Court and the RNEC program of Albert Luthuli, the Youth Citizens Action Program, Democracy Education, and so on. But in 2022, what we want to do is continue with a hybrid approach and ensure that we then have these various programs continue. Looking at school and sports enrichment, we will see how best to rebuild and reboot and resume the learner programs in 2022. And we will focus on the readiness of the schools to resume that by ensuring that the COVID protocols are in place. When there is a high infectious rate, we will then go on to a hybrid model where we look at what we can do virtually. It becomes difficult on sport, but we have seen that with other aspects like quiet practice and so on, there have been very innovative ways in which you could use even the internet to prepare for that. So this then is a presentation. It gives you a very detailed summary of what is that we have done in preparation for readiness, and it has taken on board COVID protocols and COVID interactions and remote learning that we have to also look at. Thank you very much, honourable members.
Thank you very much. Are there additions from the department? Anyone wants to add something? Feeling that there's something that was left.
Yes,
absence of any honorable members, there's the presentation on readiness for admissions for 2022. We can engage with the presentation by asking
unless
questions.
Unless you want to add, but this is a presentation.
Who is that? With the questions, I'd like to know, GM, what is the progress in terms of the repairs to schools that are storm damaged? And remember, there were uprisings in July in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng. What I want to know is how far would you in repairing food that were damaged and the properties that, you know, furniture stolen and then computers in those schools in KwaZulu-Natal. My heart actually goes to the Golden Steps school in KwaZulu-Natal. schools of children who are with very serious disabilities. Their computers got stolen, and the workshop was looted, and many others. So I'd like to know how far we in repairing the schools and making sure that they'll be ready for the intake of next year. And of course, the South Africans are, you know, people moving from rural areas to closer to towns. What will happen, like in the Eastern Cape and Limpopo and Gauteng, even KwaZulu-Natal? I think all provinces where there are rural areas near cities, people will obviously flock from the move from the villages closer to the city, and that could cause classroom shortages. Are there plans, for instance, in acquiring mobile classes to accommodate those children? Because obviously there will be shortages of classes in light of the COVID-19 restrictions, with social distancing. And if we have more children this year, more than we had last year, obviously there will be those kind of shortages. And yeah, what are our plans in dealing with it? Honourable members, the floor is yours. Those who want to ask questions, and let us engage with the report. And thanks for the details in the report. Thanks a lot. Over to you, honourable members. By show of hands, let's say I see the hand there, Mbulelo Baga, followed by Audrey Malega. Honorable Mauricio Gilio, Honorable Lindile Luthuli, Honorable Dalmain, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me welcome the report presented by the department. I think that it shows that at least there's readiness for 2022. But I have, I think, about four questions, Chairperson. One is, what are the plans that the department has for the learners who dropped out because of during the COVID-19 period? Is there any kind of leeway that is open for those learners who would want to come back to school come early next year when we reopen? The second one, Chairperson, is on learner vaccination. We've seen that there's a rise in terms of COVID cases as we speak, which takes us to almost the fourth wave as it is. Termed at this point. What plans are there that are made for the learners to be able to get some kind of vaccinations to avoid such spread as we get ready to the schooling period again. The third one, Chairperson, is around the school readiness. The school readiness visits are conducted on an annual basis. How have the findings of their visits been used to inform preparations for school readiness of the oncoming year? And the last one, Chairperson, is around the fact that I want to welcome the fact that the DG and team, or his team, have done school visits for infrastructural oversight, which I think that is related more to the question that you just raised, Chairperson. To what extent do we still experience vandalism in our schools based on the fact that we've seen that it has been vandalism that has been taking place during the COVID-19 period? Is that now something that we are able to deal with or able to handle, or has it gone down more than it was before or during the first outbreak of COVID-19? But I want to welcome the report, Chairperson, and the readiness that is indicated by the department as we proceed towards 2022. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Pastor. Honorable Ndongeni, you are recognized. You'll speak last. You are last on the list. The next person will be Honorable Maleka.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to the report from the department, and it's clear and convincing, Chairperson. What I want to check with the department, what is the department planning to do with shortages in respect of learner transport and roads? And my other question, and to check with how many unqualified foreign educators with fraudulent certificates does the department currently employ? And what is the department doing to keep that from occurring? I think that's my two questions.
Thanks, Honorable Maleka. Honorable Gillian.
Thank you, Chairperson. And let me welcome the report from the department. And thank you, DM. Chairperson, out of this report, I can see that the department is ready in a lot of areas. But in this province where I'm residing and representing this August House, I am very worried. Because every year, DM, it's the very same story. Up until yesterday, there was 29,000 unplaced learners in the province of the Western Cape. And this is a repeating story year on year. Getting calls from parents who applied for their children to be placed in school early during this year already, still up until today. There is parents struggling to get their children into school. I've also heard out of this presentation that was given to us that the old story is still continuing, and not only this province but throughout the country, that we are faced with for many, many years, and that is the story between the department and the SGB's unplacement. Now, DM, it has been highlighted that Gauteng and the Western Cape are the provinces that we are facing this problem every year. And really, it can't continue like this. During previous deliberation, one of the issues that was highlighted during this committee and the department engagement and also with social development is the issue of that we don't have enough social workers in our schools. And one of the issues that I'm trying to highlight and trying to get answers for our parents and children also has to do with all the struggle that the children and parents are going through. When they are at last, sometimes months in the new school year, when they are placed in schools, I experience so much trauma. Now, my question to you as the DG and the DM this morning is as follows. When are we going to get into a situation where at the end of a school year, we don't have enough place for children who must attend school? It is their constitutional rights. What are you doing in conjunction with the Western Cape Education Department? And I am specifically talking on the Western Cape Education Department this morning. Because DM, when you look at the old Model C schools, there is so much place in that school. And our poor children from the rural areas and from the townships must be 40-50 in a classroom. And when you go to the previously Model C school, there's 10 to 15 children in a school. How do we clarify this, that this is a norm? That there is certain people who's got money that can do everything and our children must be out of school. I think it is high time that we must look into this practice. We must look into the practice that children are not getting their constitutional rights to be part of the school system while people with money and their rich children and the affluent areas in this province, people are going to school very, very comfortably. I think we can't continue like this. Not where we are in this South Africa at this point in time. Secondly, DM, we can have a very ready report on paper, but when it comes to practice, we are not so ready. I am bleeding in my heart, DM, because every year on year, it is the same problem. It is the same answers. You can't give answers to that poor people who are phoning you day and night. And it's not only the poor people in the Western Cape. It's also people coming from previous disadvantaged communities who has empowered themselves, who has become middle class, whose children are just refused at previous Model C schools because they are not white enough. No matter what the policies of this national government of education are. And I don't know what we as the education department is going to do to intervene in this. Because we can't continue year on year, it's the same old story. People are traumatized because the children are not placed in school. Thank you, dear.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Gillian. I think maybe we should find a way of writing some of these questions to the provincial departments where there are these issues, where each and every year we have you know, the same problems recurring. We don't seem to be learning from the previous years when it comes to registrations of schools. So if there are particular issues that members would like to raise pertaining to their problem, to their provinces, I think it will be wise to write them down and send them to the department so that we can get those answers from the provinces. We don't see what happened in the last 3 years recurring this year. Honorable Madandona, even where I think we, as a committee, if we agree, we can call any MEC to come and explain themselves where they are, where we are not getting satisfactory answers. Honorable Madandona, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to everyone. One would like to welcome the presentation by the department. Most of my questions have been covered, but I would also like to add something on what the honorable members have already asked, especially in the shortage of learners' transport. DM, we know that in KZN there's a lot of kids being raped and kids being kidnapped are walking to school and from school. So one would like to know if maybe in 2022 the problem of scholar transport will be sorted out, more especially in KZN, because I come from KZN. And also, one would like to welcome a teachers assistance program, but maybe because we see there's a need for teachers assistance, why don't we have a program to hire these teachers assistants on a permanent post? I will make an example. In a school where a teacher teaches a 7-day circle, you'll find that 4 days they spend it on administration and 3 days on conduct time. So I believe that these teachers assistance is needed, and it should be on a permanent and also, I would also want to add to what Honorable Baha was saying in terms of security in our schools. As we are approaching our closing of schools, we know that most of the schools will be vandalized. There will be break-ins in schools. And when we come in January, there will be a lot of fixing our infrastructure. Can the department find proper and qualified guards to guard our schools and be paid or be insourced, rather than we get a company that will bring us security guards and they become expropriated? So, and the last one is the overcrowded of schools. We don't know how long the COVID is going to stay with us, and it's been a problem for quite some time, the shortage of classrooms in our schools. What are the plans in the department? Do we have something that is on the pipeline in terms of building more classrooms in our schools? Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Lutuli. Then next will be Honorable Christian.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I hope I'm audible because I'm in an area where my reception is not too good. Chairperson, my question is just around the placements of learners. The question was asked by Honorable Gillian, but I want to know about the rest of the province. Since before, in the Northern Cape, a few months ago, there was a huge issue with parents complaining that their children have not been placed yet. So specifically Northern Cape, but also in all the other provinces, what do our children placements look like in our schools? And then my next question is about the rotational timetables at school. Will that still continue in the new year? Because I know in the Northern Cape that children are still going to school twice 1 week and then the following week 3 times. So in light of the COVID total increasing again, what will that rotational timetable remain, or will other plans be made? Additionally, in light of the COVID totals increasing again, what plans does the department have in place to assist teachers and learners with remote learning? Again, my focus is on the Northern Cape because of our vast terrain, our long distances, but also because of bandwidth and network issues within the Northern Cape. How will that be sorted out in light of our COVID totals increasing again? And lastly, does the department have some kind of collaboration with the Department of Health? We've heard in the news recently that especially our younger children are getting ill with the new COVID variant. Does the Department of Education have some kind of collaboration with the health department to see to it that our young children are either vaccinated or that there's an awareness making, more awareness making process in our schools and especially in our primary schools where it seems that the COVID cases will rise amongst our younger children. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Dalmain. Honorable Nokuzola Ndongeni.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, colleagues. We welcome the department and sorry, Chair. Nothing for better, nothing. It's technology. We welcome the report we have about the readiness of the schools. I've been covered with my questions, but I have only two questions about the renewal of contracts of temporary educators. The second one, I didn't hear about the delivery of the stationery. I'm not quite sure whether they have reported about the delivery, because it used to be the late delivery of the stationery. So they have a plan on that. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Ndongeni. DM, let's hear the responses to this. I want to hear something about golden steps. If there is any information, if there is none, then that information can be given to us in writing. Golden steps is that school.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Welcome.
My gadget is not good. I'm using Zubeda's gadget now. And with the DG and the team, I would like them to come first, then I will clean where they have left. DG, I see you are still in the meeting.
Thank you, DM. Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. DM, I'm going to try and respond to the questions raised by honorable members. Let me start with the questions raised by Honorable Baha. I must apologize, I missed the second question, I've got the first one. The first one was, do we know the learners who constitute the dropout rate and what are we doing about it, particularly those learners who might have dropped out as a result of the impact of COVID-19. Let me try and respond to this, DM, in the way that I responded to the portfolio committee the other time. The figures that we have for 2020 is 13.1 million learners in the system, an increase from 12.6 million learners. Learners who attended school in 2020, that is according to our MIS data, which means we had an increase in 2020 of 500,000 learners, despite the fact that we had COVID-19. In 2021, the MIS data indicates that we've got 13.4 learners, which is an increase of 300,000 learners compared to the previous year. We do not dispute the fact that learners might be dropping out, but we want to bring to the attention of this committee and all others, including the public, that more often than not, when people calculate or work out the dropout rate, they'll say, for instance, 1.5 or 1.4 learners entered grade R or grade 1. In grade 12, for instance, this year we're going to have 800,000 learners. What has happened to the 500,000 learners? Many people forget that at the end of grade 9, many learners choose to go to FET colleges, and FET colleges have got over 800,000 learners, Honorable Chair. So in our calculation, we simply forget about the pathway offered by FET colleges at the end of grade 9, and if we don't see this number in grade 12, we are saying, no, they got lost in the system. This view is held by very esteemed, highly respected academics and professors in South Africa, which is not correct. And I'm trying to correct it, to say we need to factor in learners who go to FET colleges after grade 9. The official figure that we arrived at, and we still looking at the figures that are coming in now, which is a while ago, was that the dropout rate in the entire system was between 11% and 15%, which is not more than that, which is not what people purport it to be. So in short, Honorable Baha, if learners left the system and they choose to come back at some stage, they are accepted in the system. No learner would be rejected on the basis of the fact that they left the system at some point. We do accept them. But we are also conscious of age appropriateness. Those that we of the view that they might have gone through the age appropriateness of getting into the grade that they want to get into, they are referred to like ABET centers and so on. The third question that you asked, I did indicate that I missed the second one, was about our monitoring during the reopening of schools. What do we do about these findings? Indeed, these findings are factored in, but I must be woefully honest, many of them which have to do with infrastructure take some time before they are acted upon, given the financial constraints that provinces find themselves in. So that's about that in terms of the findings. But many of them are indeed acted upon. We do even go back to oversight structures of Parliament and say, this is what we found. The portfolio committee insists on that. After going on the oversight visits, they would say, come, tell us what you have found, what is your plan, and this is what we have found ourselves, and what are you going to do about this? And sometimes they would call us with provinces into one meeting. We do act upon this, but I must be woefully honest, we are unable to act on all of them. But those that we are able to act on, we do act on them. Vandalism is a major Achilles heel of the sector, and I think of government and the general South African public. Now that schools will be closing, Honorable Baha, I begin to anticipate the damage that is going to accrue as a result of vandalism and theft in schools. Schools have been linked to police stations. A doctor, a cop is what we have, but as we all know, during the festive season when schools are closed, the South African Police Service also has to contend with crimes, broader crimes in society, and as a result, to be honest, they are unable to pay attention to individual schools. At the same time, as government, we don't have money to employ security per school. The teacher assistance and general assistance program, or general workers program, goes a long way in assisting in this regard. Although you don't have people who are trained as security personnel who are posted, but at least the general assistants are able to keep watch, and if people see that at least there's somebody on the school premises, the vandalism and theft in schools is reduced. I also want to latch on what Honorable Luthuli also raised about the possibility of, I think we're on the same page. Our view is that we need these young people to be employed much longer than the 3 to 6 months. We've muted this to Treasury, National Treasury. They've not rejected it, but they've not even, neither accepted it. They said that they are giving it a thought. They look at the resources and then check whether it would be possible to take them on a much longer, we're even suggesting over the medium term period, at least a period of 3 years. And then we budget for them again, and maybe over time they could be absorbed permanently in the system. They don't only ameliorate the problem of easing the burden on teachers. There are one teacher schools, Chair. If the teacher gets ill, there's no school in some of these one teacher schools. And with this teacher assistance, I've been out to provinces from February on the school infrastructure program to check also, because the majority of these schools are your schools in the far-flung rural areas, in your commercial farming areas, one teacher school, two teacher school, and so on. The teacher assistants come in handy, especially when the teacher is ill-disposed due to natural factors. So I agree with Honorable Luthuli there. And Honorable Maleka, learner transport, it's a real problem, especially in KZN. And again, I want to agree with Honorable Luthuli there. KZN having the largest number of learners and experiencing serious financial challenges owing to budget cuts. I mean, KZN, I think, experienced in one financial year 5 billion cut from its budget, Chair. And I'm saying with that budget cut, you're likely to bring the department big as it is, like KZN, on its knees. It is budget cuts that really undermine the intentions of the sector and the department to provide adequate learner transport to learners, not only of KZN, but across all the 9 provinces. And this is beginning to hit the sector. At some point, we'll be able to say to honorable members, we are unable to appoint teachers because of budget cuts. That's how serious this has started to bite the sector. And learner transport in the main, we are unable to provide for all the learners, or if for more learners, because of budget cuts. It's a reality. Unqualified foreign educators with fraudulent certificates. Fraudulent certificates, you do get them not only from foreign nationals, but even from South Africans. And these matters are dealt with by South African Qualifications Authority, They are also dealt with by SAIDS. And I think in terms of the exact figures, we could get those figures from SAIDS and then send them back to the select committee to indicate how many. The numbers have gone drastically down. I hardly hear of that. It used to be quite prevalent, but given the fact that SAIDS insists that before teachers start to teach, there must be confirmation from SAIDS that these people have the requisite license to teach, and that has helped a lot. Honorable Gillion, you are right. Well, the reason why this phenomenon of unplaced learners is quite prominent, particularly in Western Cape and Gauteng, it's because of the inward migration in those provinces that is unprecedented as compared to the other seven provinces. They've got the highest number of people who move into those provinces. But I want to agree with you, and part of the problem in Gauteng and Western Cape, and Western Cape, I want to say Cape Town. Let's not say Western Cape. Let's say Cape Town. There is a problem of favorable classroom population among your former Motlosi schools, which we've raised with my colleague in the Western Cape. I think beginning of this year, I had to go there. The minister and deputy minister sent me there. I met with the HOD. They eventually met with the premier. The premier intervened and got the provincial treasury to release money for mobile classrooms to be procured so that learners could be placed. It had precipitated to a very serious crisis. I fully agree with your sentiments, being close to the furnace of fire, as you are, particularly in Cape Town. It is a problem, and it is an annual ongoing problem. And part of the problem, Chair, is that you don't have enough land designated for schools. I've already acknowledged the favorable class population of former Model C schools, but the other problem is that land in Cape Town and Johannesburg and neighboring towns is used for commercial purposes, and schools are not considered. They come as an afterthought. People think about, you know, commercial means of getting development in these affluent towns, and they tend to forget about schools. I'm not sure the issue of how far the issue of virtual classrooms is going to assist in this regard. Obviously, making it more available for the affluent so that they release brick and mortar for the poor who don't have the means to use virtual classrooms. And we are hoping that that intervention will help to ease this pressure as well. But I fully agree with you. Year in and year out, we have this problem. Last year, the premier had to intervene to procure mobile classrooms. Part of the readiness also is that provinces had to look at procuring mobile classrooms. I'm also responding to Honorable Lutuli's question about overpopulated classrooms or classrooms that are overcrowded. Overcrowding under COVID-19 is a no-no. We've said that to provinces, districts and schools, because it will lend itself to super spreaders as schools and even classrooms. Social workers, the grant for learners with severe and profound intellectual disabilities has enabled us to employ psychologists and social workers at provincial and district level. We are unable, Honorable Gillion, to provide them per school. But the grant that I'm referring to has afforded us the means at least to provide a district, provincial, a district and provincial level. Psychologists, social workers, therapists, and so on. Through the grant, LSPID grant, we are able to provide those. And that has been able to help to assess learners for placement and so on, to also deal with psychosocial problems of learners. But we also use other means, you know, your lay counselors, young people who are employed through the HIV and AIDS grant, we're also using them there to assist. And through the phase two, which also provides teacher assistance, we're looking at your lay assistance, as those will be able to provide support to learners in the absence of your qualified social workers and so on. We also use the institutions of civil society, such as religious bodies, to work with them, particularly under COVID-19, to help us to deal with issues of trauma as a result of losing a loved one, to help with counseling and so on, including universities and NGOs, online services that are provided through the line function of the psychosocial support. We also use them there. And then when are we going to resolve the problem of unplaced learners? Honorable Gillian, my problem is that I appear to you regularly. I don't want to make commitments that are not going to happen. What I can say to you is that I am extremely optimistic. The numbers that we are sitting with this year, in my view, are much lower than the numbers that we had last year and the year before. So over time, we should be able to overcome this challenge. With virtual means of learning and teaching coming into the fray, and being able to attract your middle class and the affluent people, I'm hopeful that it would leave your brick and mortar space for the poor who should be accommodated in the spaces that they will vacate. UCT already has announced and launched its online school, and there are many others that are coming up. We've developed a draft framework to regulate this as well. I've spoken to Honorable Lutuli, Leonard Transport KZN, the issue of teacher assistance, the shortage of classrooms. I've spoken to that. Honorable Christian, placement of learners, particularly in the Northern Cape. I was actually shocked to learn that an area close to Springbok, which is a mining area, a booming mining area, which of course has attracted more people, has started to experience the problem of the placement of learners. So we've been working with provinces to address this matter. And Honorable Chair, naturally this problem is experienced in areas of economic activity, because people accentuate there with a hope of getting some livelihood out of these areas of economic activity. But it's not something that is prevalent throughout, every town of every province, but it's particularly in areas of economic activity. Assistance with remote learning to learners, I must be woefully honest, this could be available to learners whose parents are affluent. The virtual means of learning is there, particularly for your quintile 4 and 5 schools, but your quintile 1 to 3 schools who come from poor households, this is not available to them. I'm being woefully honest again. And the connectivity that you are providing is essentially connectivity that would provide to learners when they are at school. And then collaboration with the Department of Health. Yes, indeed. As we speak, Dr. Kumalo has just finished. Dr. Whittle and Dr. Kumalo sit on the ministerial committees, including the working groups of the Department of Health. We work with the NICD. We get information from them. The data that we use to update our
risk-adjusted differentiated strategy. We get it from the NICD. So we have our officials work with the Department of Health. The issue of the vaccination of learners, health was not keen to go it the same way that they've done for educators and the other workers. And we still want to continue to persuade them that with a very low traction from the general public, I think those resources can be redirected to our schools so that learners are now prioritized for vaccination. So Dr. Whittle and Dr. Kumalo, who's in my office advising the department on COVID-19, sit in the structures of the Department of Health to deal with these matters. They have just updated HEDCOM on the situation around the Omicron, the extent to which it affects learners. We are at HEDCOM from 8 o'clock up to late this evening, preparing for the reopening of schools, looking at progress made. Exams have been concluded. Progress in terms of marking and preparations for all that up to the release of the results, as the DM also indicated. Honorable Ndongeni, renewal of contracts for temporary educators is part of the readiness. We've been working with provinces that that happens now, so that when schools reopen, and we no longer have that, we used to have it, you'd find that schools are running without teachers because contracts were not renewed, as though we didn't know that we were going to need these teachers come the reopening of schools. Delivery of LTSM is part of the presentation. We did have some challenges with some provinces. Eastern Cape is one of those. But the HOD, Dr. Mbut, has assured me that she's put mechanisms in place to make sure that learners are not going to be compromised because of the lack of or the late delivery of LTSM in that province. DM, thank you very much. I'm going to ask Mrs. Kea to assist. Mr. Mahada has just made me aware that the second question of Honorable Baha was about the vaccination of learners, but I've covered that. There is no indication now, it's only individual families who are making arrangements for vaccination and so on. As I've said, the Department of Health was really not keen to focus on the sector and focus on the vaccination of learners, but we've not given up. We're still going to follow this up. I think we believe that with the vaccination of learners, it's going to help us a great deal even to retain all learners and end the issue of the rotational system, which was, I think, raised by Honorable Christian, the rotational timetable. HEDCOM, as I said, is busy discussing that. Our intention is to retain all the primary school learners, but until we conclude and look at the risks that are presented by Dr. Kumalo and Dr. Whittle in terms of the prevalence of the virus, the vaccination of teachers, and all other factors that are coming from the Department of Health, I'm unable to confidently say that we beat the rotational timetable goodbye. Not as yet, but the proposal that we had made was that for high schools, we need to continue with this whilst we get grade 12 and grade 11 coming back. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I do get an indication that I've overstayed my welcome. So maybe Ms. Gaya could just touch on those that I did not cover. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Any additions?
I think the Chair has done a really good job of answering the questions. There just remains a question around the foreign qualifications and how we are dealing with that. So there is a set procedure that is actually in place in DHEC. It's a criminal offence for any person to have a fraudulent qualification, irrespective of whether you are a foreign national or you are part of a citizen of South Africa. And so the moment that the verification of the qualifications, which is done through SACWA, is approved, or they pick up that these are fraudulent qualifications, there is a process that is alerted that kicks into place and that then deals with the fraudulent qualifications. And we have always been able to pick it up because of the way in which you have to get approval from SAQWA. So initially you may be able to get in because of the urgency that a school may need to have a teacher immediately, but you're not able to stay there very long. And the moment SAQWA picks it up, that's when the criminal aspects of the procedure kicks into play. And SAPS and the Hawks become involved in the process in that way. There is also an area that was talking to the scholar transport, in particular in KZN, and how that will be sorted out. So we don't have exactly the details of what is the problem in KZN, because the report has not reflected on it. They have indicated that everything that is under control in terms of the targets. You will see that there are slides that talk to the targets of how many learners they are supposed to be transporting. And from that, there is a shortfall. I can see that there is a shortfall of the number of learners that should be transported. But they have indicated that they are in discussions with the Department of Transport around increasing the number of buses on the route. So other than that, I'm not sure exactly the details. Maybe if we get the details of that, we can do further investigation into KZN around transport. The issue of the teacher assistance and that it needs to be permanent, I think that everyone in the schooling system would welcome that. But this is a program of the Presidential Youth Initiative. And this has been a relief during the COVID period to help the schools in particular to manage the COVID circumstances. So teacher assistance, we don't have an example of teacher assistance being a full-time kind of a post that is required in the schooling system. We have set qualifications that require you to be a teacher. And then during COVID, because of the problems that we had to have with the COVID protocols, we had to have help to relieve the schooling system to get the cleaning and the temperatures and the registering of the making sure the learners sanitize and ensure that the protocols are followed. So these assistants and these general assistants, they helped us with that. And then the concept of a teacher assistant as a formal post in education is not yet something that we have reached. So the difficulty around getting them permanent, it lies in that detail, because you have to understand exactly what will these people do, how will they support a teacher, what would be the qualification that that person would require. There's a process that needs to be involved before we can create such posts and have the funding available in government to offer such posts. But from an educational point of view, I think that the teachers in the schools really welcome the assistance that they receive from having some support, and from a job creation point of view, I can also understand why there was a plea for that question that was asked. Other than that, DJ, I don't think there's anything more that I need to ask. Thank you.
Thank you, Simone, and thank you, Chair. Maybe if I can add on the vaccination of learners. There is little that the department can do. Yes, there was a question about our collaboration with the Department of Health. We work very well with the Department of Health on immunization and all these other kind of work that will compel us to work together. But on the vaccination, remember vaccination, the way it was introduced, it was said it's not compulsory. But of course now many sectors of life, they see that there must be a form of mandatory vaccination. We have not yet taken that decision as education, because we're part of government which says it's not compulsory. So we rely on parents. We always say that we have a social media parents who will criticize and condemn and do all these things for to dissuade and discourage parents to vaccinate their learners. So, but we are going to make that awareness that please, as we always make, like we do in teachers, that please let's vaccinate so that the country may be fully open. And even schools will be fully open if we vaccinate our children, that everybody that comes to a school is vaccinated. Then it makes us to go back to our normal, though we may not be where we were in the past. So on the remote learning or unplaced learners, DG covered this very well. It's not only in the, yes, it's right, in these two big cities, Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Pretoria, and Ekurhuleni, these big cities. And not only these ones, including your Nelson Mandela Metro, your Durban, your Mbombela, in all this, all the big cities in all the 9 provinces, they experience the same. Unfortunately, as DG correctly put it, many people moved to live in cities. But I live in White River. Now, as we're speaking, I am in White River. In White River, we had only 2 schools, White River Lyre School and White River War School, Veterans Hill War School. We never increased the number of schools, not because education does not budget. I remember when I was MEC for education in Bumalang, I budgeted for extra schools in White River, Nelspruit, all the towns where I know that people are coming. But there is literally no land. These private developers, they don't leave any space for social amenities. That's what gives us a problem. But that now the area is 10 times more than it was, but the capacity of the school is still at that 1 over 10, and now it's 10 over 10, which is a problem. And yes, we do increase classrooms in those schools. Now the schools are bigger than they were supposed to be. That's why now a million of private schools are coming in the areas, because they will just buy a house, somebody's house, they use the rooms, the classrooms, etc., etc. But we are working on that. We are working with SALGA and COGTA to say, please, in the municipalities, let there be space to build schools. So we spoke with all MECs. We are going to have a meeting very soon to look at the readiness, and that readiness will also focus on the unplaced learners, as to, because I know there are learners that are on the waiting list, and etc. We want those numbers in the next meeting, which will take place now before we go on vacation. Issue of remote learning is so true. That should be the way to go. But remember, we are not working alone in this regard. We depend the variable, whatever. We depend on Department of Communication for the connectivity in our schools. So, but we are working with our own partners. But if the learners are at home, it still becomes a challenge, because we can connect schools, but if maybe there comes a time where we say learners must be at home, then the child cannot access any connectivity at home, which is a problem. So, but we agreed, DG knows, we agreed with Minister that we are going to take a strategic planning with all the MECs and check how best can we improve on the remote learning. We want to improve on that. DG, you responded very well on vandalism. Vandalism is something that is always there, especially now that schools are closed and no one will be at school. People tend to make schools their park. They come when, or they are finisher shop, they've seen a dog, they want to come and buy from a school. So the vandalism that took place during the July unrest in KwaZulu-Natal, most schools have been renovated. Most. In Gauteng, they are at 97% in when coming to fixing all the damages caused by the July unrest. They are at 97%. The 3% are those schools which it wasn't easy for the department to fix the school when learners are there. They plan, their plan is that they are going to fix the schools now when children are no longer at school, and which is also the same with KwaZulu-Natal. The MEC told me that the government, the treasury of KwaZulu-Natal gave them 14 million for the remaining schools to fix. On the Golden Step schools, Chair, I know you asked this question, it was the admin block which was extremely destroyed and vandalized. We want to report that the admin block has been renovated, it has been fixed. And I want to thank UNICEF for assisting the province of KwaZulu-Natal with some of the renovations, because you find that not all schools are, the entire school is vandalized, but particular classrooms, and those ones are fixed. So UNICEF came now to say, those that are not finished, they are coming to help us to finish them. I remember in one instance, they even said they want to rebuild the whole school. Then the officials in the department said, in the department at KwaZulu-Natal, they said, no, it's only the admin block that is vandalized, especially the Golden Steps, because UNICEF wanted to replace the entire school. They said, no, it's not the entire school, yet the school itself is old. But we are working with UNICEF in January. We'll be visiting schools with them in the KwaZulu-Natal province, and we'll make sure that we fix everything. Yeah, I indicated that vaccination depends on parents, and we are appealing to parents to say, please let them vaccinate their children. Let them allow their children to be vaccinated, and it will make life better for the schools. Vicky, there was a question about temporary teachers. How are we making them permanent? Not all temporary teachers can be permanented in terms of the nature of their temporary assistance, because you find that you are a temporary teacher because somebody is on maternity leave. And there are those that are used by province to rotate. You start from this school, this one is on maternity leave, next time is another teacher, you replace. And the post is committed, the post is filled. So, but in the event, there is an agreement reached at the bargaining council on the process of permanenting the temporary teachers, and we are following that resolution. When a post is created, temporary teachers are also considered fulfilling the post. If you are temporary in that post, and then automatically you become the first preferred choice for the post. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, our members. If there are other questions, like I said earlier, that we need to ask directly to provinces, we can send them through Nultando, so that we can, you know, get the answers on time. I think we're at the end of our engagement. Let me take this opportunity, DM and the team, to thank you for the work well done. I spent last week with you for a day. I can see how you guys are working. You are actually going beyond the call of duty in that little time that I spent with you, the 2 days. This is our last meeting as the committee, and I wish you you well in your endeavors and get some time to upumula teaching. At least make some time this December to rest. You've been driving from province to province, checking schools and, you know, engaging with the departments. We really appreciate that. And as a result, that's why things are getting better all the time, because everybody knows that Big Brother is watching you. Continue playing that role. Sanitize, wear a mask. We need you next year. And this goes to all of you, DM, and all the members. Let us stay safe during this festive season. And that Sibuye Saphelele in January. We don't want to see Masphelelanga as a committee. With these words, enjoy your festive season. DM?
Okay.
That's the last word.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson, and the members, honorable members, for the good work that you are doing for the country. You are the ears and the mouthpiece of the people of our country, South Africa. And sometimes we feel you are a bit rough, tackling us rough, but in the end we see that you are doing good for the nation, because you see things that we may not see. And when you visit schools in your own right, you see things that we may not see, and we reach areas which we might not reach. And when you bring back that information, it helps the department to improve. And one other last request, Chair, when we visit schools during the reopening of schools, let's submit written reports to the department, because it's so painful, Chair. You visit a school, you face challenges in that school. The next year you visit the same school, same things are not addressed. And taking a phone and calling the deputy minister, the deputy minister, I'm in this school, this is happening, and most members are doing that. After the call, I forgot what you said. But if we make a plea to all members, write a report, just write your findings in a school, then we know. So we are calling upon all of you, Chair, and the members, to visit schools on the opening of the schools in January 2020. Wish you as a department a spirit-filled festive season, and you'll be blessed, all of you and your families, that you'll be safe even from the coronavirus. We come and meet again in 2022. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I missed the end of Honorable Gillion that was up. I didn't see that. Honorable Gillion, do you want to say something? Sorry, I didn't see your hand.
Thank you very much, and sorry that you didn't see my hand and that I must now speak after the DM. Sorry for that, DM. But, Chairperson, let me take this opportunity to thank the DG for that prompt answer on the Western Cape. My question is just that I believe that the DG did put pressure on the Department of Education in the Western Cape last year. I will really request that DG, the MN, to do that as well, so that when we come back from this festive season, that we do have a better answer for the parents in the Western Cape. Because I can give you this guarantee, DM, my phone is ringing non-stop. And it is so unfortunate that we must experience this every single year. And thank you also for your hard work, DG and DM. And also to the minister, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Gillian. Sorry, I didn't see your hand then. And this will go to all members who've got the issues pertaining to their provinces. We need to, like the DM has said, that we need to write these things down, our observations and all the questions that we have, and, you know, when and we
anything that the department or the DG can make interventions, let us do that. And also say to the members of the committee and the support team, you've done well during this course of this year, and that stay safe, sanitize, use a mask. Let's meet again in Pelele next year. With this words, this meeting is adjourned. Enjoy the season.
Thank you so much, sir.
There will be the members, the DM and DG, your staff will be released, and the department and the committee will remain just doing some committee work.
Thank you, sir.
All released except the members of the committee and the support staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. Thank you, DM.
Liabulela. Liabulela. Enkosi.
Liabulela. Arre.
Liabulela.
No. Letabulela Gonte, this is another meeting. Siabulela, Nyan. We have minutes of the 30th of November. Any matters arising from this minute? If there is none, we have had this minute for quite some days. If there is no matter, is there any move for adoption of this minutes? Is there any move for adoption?
Member Killian, move for the adoption.
Dongeni seconded. Thank you very much. Is there another matter, Honourable Sis Nolkando? In the absence of any. And let's thank you, Nolkando, for being a very good engine for this committee, for this car. Without you, I don't think we'll be where we are now. And thank you very much, together with the team that you work with, including the researchers, the content advisor, you know, all the fireworks. Thank you very much. You made our life much easier. Without your endeavors, I think we'll be stressed by now. I mean, the stress will be beyond any management. Thank you very much, and this meeting is adjourned. Baya danke. Hamben gash.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Hey, ni vasisa, ndani ngavasene nya.
Niabulela.